Welcome back in. Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton to the program. Obviously, you can hear her every day on Stillman & Company as well from 2 to 6. Caroline, how are you? I guess my first question is, are you okay after what we saw from Brian Kelly and LSU the other night against Florida State?
You know, Robbie, no. No, I'm not. But I appreciate you asking. Yesterday was therapeutic.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, it was therapeutic for me yesterday. You know, I went on the midday show, Invented. I talked on the on our show, Stillman & Company, yesterday, Invented. We did a couple podcast appearances and Invented. So better, but no, Robbie, not okay. Not okay.
It was... It was a rough one. There's no question about that. I would say special teams probably need some work. But in all seriousness, your takeaways from exactly where LSU is now and what you think they can be as they move forward in Brian Kelly's first year.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned special teams. That's one of the most glaringly obvious things that was atrocious on Sunday night. I mean, two muffed punts, a blocked field goal, and a blocked extra point. And I mean, that's the difference in the game right there is special teams alone. I mean, I guess if you want to take the tiniest, ittiest, bittiest little, you know, golden little ray of sunshine from that and the two muffed punts, unless you held Florida State to 0 points. So, you know, that's good. So go defense. I mean, the offensive line is also just one of the most glaringly obvious problems with this team because that extra point does not get blocked. Net field goal does not get blocked if that offensive line unit can at least block for a Florida State, or excuse me, for a field goal or for an extra point. So that's a problem there. I mean, and also all game long, Jaden Daniels was just getting swarmed. And that was one of my problems, and I think a lot of LSU fans' problems with Jaden Daniels on Sunday night was, hey, just throw the ball a little bit more. I noticed in the first half, it reminded me a lot of Malik Willis in that Ravens preseason game because he wouldn't drop back, kind of go through his progression, look and find an open man. He pretty much just dropped back and just immediately start running. So that was one thing was, you know, I need the offensive line to do better, to just do their job so Jaden Daniels can at least throw the ball. But I place very, very little, if any, blame on Jaden Daniels because he was an absolute baller out there. He was able to keep a lot of plays alive with his legs that probably other quarterbacks would not be able to do. So he was able to overcome really, really bad offensive line play. And I think just, you know, we can talk all day long about the X's and O's when it comes down to it. Brian Kelly did not prepare that team for that game on Sunday night. I mean, they looked sloppy. They looked unorganized. They didn't look ready. They looked surprised by a lot of the things that Florida State pulled out on them, both on offense and defense. And some of the timeout mismanagement. Why call on a timeout right whenever it is a change of possession? Your offense was just on the sidelines for 4 minutes. Why are you calling a timeout? Why are you waiting 20 or 30 seconds to call a timeout after Florida State fumbles the ball at the 1 yard line after you just muff a punt? There's still about 2 minutes left in the game. You can still come back. You're still in this game. So I think overall, you know, I understand that it's not going to be an overnight fix for Brian Kelly. I didn't expect things to be perfect. I didn't expect LSU to compete for an SEC title game year one. But there were a lot of things that I saw on Sunday night that looked a lot like the Coach O coached teams. And that's exactly why Brian Kelly was brought into LSU, was to right the wrong that Coach O did, was disorganization, dysfunction, and just sloppy play. And that didn't look like a Brian Kelly coached team on Sunday night.
No, I wasn't even going to bring this up, but I hope this is cathartic for you a little bit, Caroline.
It is.
Well, but speaking of Coach O, yeah, who was it? I think it was Kaharski who read this aloud at the Titans presser yesterday. It was like some fake account, but it was like, Kayshon Booty has left the team, and he called Brian Kelly like a fake Ed O or something that. Did you have even a moment of like thinking this was real?
No. Well, also two things there. I mean, everyone is saying, you know, call back Coach O, this is awful. No, let's not forget just how awful some of those Coach O teams were in 2020 and 2021. Let's not forget how bad he left that program in disarray. Because even though it looked really bad on Sunday night, even though that team looked a whole lot like the 2020 and 2021 teams, a little bit too much like those teams for my comfort, I mean, you can tell the difference. I mean, I've heard everyone who's been out in a training camp, everyone who's been out of practice has said, I mean, the difference is so obvious. And just the way that practice is run and the way that the players, you know, pay more attention, they're more attentive to Brian Kelly. It's just a much more smoother running operation. So, I mean, my hope is that the changes that they've been able to see in practice start to turn over to games. The problem is we haven't seen it in the game, and that's concerning. But the Kayshon Booty side of things, I've seen so many people say, oh, Kayshon Booty's going to transfer. He's mad because he's not getting the ball, so on and so forth. Kayshon Booty got targeted 6 times on Sunday night, and he dropped 4 of those balls. And he did not catch a football until late in the third quarter. So other wide receivers were able to catch those balls. So I look at Kayshon Booty, and I'm not saying that he thinks that this offensive scheme is the problem. I'm looking at Kayshon Booty, and I'm saying, why weren't you able to catch the ball? So you're a projected top 5 pick in the draft this year. Why can't you catch a football? Why can't you get your eyes up when Jaden Daniels is targeting you in the end zone and you're looking at the field? So that's, I mean, let's not act like Kayshon Booty is all innocent in this situation, because he could have done a whole heck of a lot more on Sunday night.
No question about it. Caroline Fenton on with us here on Robbie and Rex. So, Caroline, I got to say, I was pretty surprised by what Florida was able to pull off in that game against Utah. Big win for Anthony Richardson and company, Billy Napier's first game. What did you make of that? And now with a big game coming up this week, how do you view the matchup between Florida and Kentucky?
Oh, I mean, Florida absolutely exceeded every single one of my expectations. I thought Florida, it was going to at least take some time. I mean, let's not forget that Anthony Richardson only had one start in 2021. All of his snaps came in relief, all but one game, the Georgia game. He threw 3 interceptions and threw for 80 yards. So I thought, okay, maybe Anthony Richardson just needs a little bit of time. You know, he's going up against a really difficult Utah defense. Maybe Billy Napier needs some time to adjust into the SEC. Maybe these players need some time to adjust in Billy Napier's offense. I did not think that we were going to watch a Florida performance like that. I mean, Anthony Richardson is an absolute dude. And after week one, I know it's week one. I know there is so much that can happen over the next 11 weeks. But I would look at Anthony Richardson on early Heisman watch, because he played his butt off on Saturday night. And I think that there's a few SEC teams whose ceiling is as high as 9 or 10 wins, but the floor is as low as 6. Kentucky, Florida, LSU, Tennessee, Arkansas, all teams that either have, you know, you did it last year, let me see you do it again, or LSU with a new coach, Florida with a new coach. And I think after week one, I know only 1 week, Florida looks like one of those teams that's trending toward the ceiling of a, maybe not a 10-win season, but a 9-win season for Florida, just based off of what I saw week one, because that was not an easy team that they beat in Utah. But Kentucky, Florida is going to be so fun. And that's, I'm excited to see Kentucky be a little bit more battle-tested, because to be completely honest with you, I did not watch them play Miami, Ohio. I'm sorry, Michelle. I will watch them this week. And then, it doesn't really do it for me. Elon Vanderbilt, disrespect to the doors, but doesn't really tickle the twine there. But I'm really excited to watch this game on Saturday, and I would not be surprised if you were seeing, you know, a battle for the second team in the SEC East on Saturday between Kentucky and Florida.
Woo! I don't know what you're talking about. I enjoyed the heck out of Elon Vanderbilt Saturday night.
Of course he did, Vandy Joe.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
Well, I'm with you on Anthony Richardson and Florida. You know, I think Billy Napier, like, as much crap as he took in the offseason, I think the guy can coach. And they are going to be really interesting. You mentioned Heisman, Caroline. I got to say, I said this yesterday, and I don't know. I think a lot of it has to do with just we know the team's going to be great. But I feel like Stetson Bennett should get some love there too. Like, can we move past, you know, Stetson Bennett, oh, the walk-on, and, you know, what a great story, to, like, the dude is a really good quarterback. Like, it's not just that he's surrounded by all this talent. Like, look at the plays he makes.
Stetson Bennett, I'm sorry for all of the things that I said about you last year. I thought that Stetson Bennett was just a passenger on that national championship team. Because that Georgia offense last year, they didn't do anything crazy or wild or outstanding. They played safe enough to let the defense go out there and do their job, and the offense just had to score enough points to win the game. And I thought Stetson Bennett was the perfect quarterback to do that. He's not flashy, you know, at least last year. He wasn't flashy. He wasn't going to make any, you know, wild, bold decisions. He was safe. He was a game manager. There's nothing wrong with being a game manager, but I just thought that that was kind of the ceiling for Stetson Bennett. I didn't think he was going to play on Sundays. I didn't think he was going to be a Heisman candidate. I thought he was just going to be a safe enough quarterback to let the defense do its thing, because that's exactly what he was last year. But Stetson Bennett made a statement on Saturday. He was incredibly efficient. He was going out there and making plays, not necessarily risky plays, but making big plays when they had to happen most. And if you just look at his stat line, he almost threw for 400 yards. A game manager doesn't throw for 370 yards. So, I mean, Stetson Bennett, I think, made a big statement that this Georgia offense is going to take a step forward this year. And I think that's how Georgia reloads and doesn't rebuild, is, okay, you continue to have this really good, hard-nosed defense that limits your opponent to 10 points a game. But if you continue to evolve that offense and to be multidimensional, to make those big plays, that's how you continue to contend in the SEC. And after 1 week against a Dan Lanning coach team that knows how Stetson Bennett ticks, that knows his strengths and weaknesses, and they still weren't able to stop him, whew, I think Georgia is going to continue to be. I said this yesterday, that I think Kirby Smart is going to be the Saban assistant that mimics the most success that Saban had.
Caroline, last thing for you here. What do you make of the Tennessee-Pittsburgh matchup coming up on Saturday?
Oh, I'm excited, Robbie. I'm so excited. After that West Virginia-Pitt game on Thursday night, I thought that game was drunk until I watched the game on Sunday. So, you know, what do I know? But that game on Thursday night between Pitt and West Virginia was wild. I mean, Keaton Slovis got eaten alive, Pitt quarterback. So I'm wondering, you know, can this offensive line hold off a little bit? Can this Tennessee defense actually, you know, take advantage of a Pitt offensive line that looks to not be able to protect Keaton Slovis very well? But they can both get the ball moving. And, I mean, Tennessee put up a ton of points, a ton of yards against Ball State. Let's see you do it against Pitt. I'm looking forward to that. You know, seeing a little bit more difficult competition for Tennessee and seeing how that matchup has kind of shifted from last year to this year, and how, you know, the strengths of this Tennessee team have completely changed. Now having Hendon Hooker in at quarterback rather than Joe Milton, who started last year against Pitt, how can they kind of flip the script on Pitt? I think Thursday night made me really, really excited for this Tennessee Pitt game.
Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro, joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. Caroline, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us. We'll catch you later this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
All right. Appreciate y'all. Have a good one.
Absolutely. You as well. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Coming up next, we'll continue the conversation on college football, including something we did not get to yesterday, expansion of the college football playoff. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexro at 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got some tickets to give away to see Kevin Hart coming up at Bridgestone Arena this Saturday, September the 10th. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Kevin Hart at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Saturday, September 10th, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we got to a lot of the on-the-field action in week one of college football yesterday, and we just got to some more with Caroline in the last segment. One thing we've not talked a lot about is the expansion of the college football playoff. And on Friday, the college football playoff board of managers unanimously voted to extend the play, to expand the playoff to 12 teams starting in 2026. They're hoping to get it done as soon as 2024. We'll see whether or not that ends up happening. Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC, seems to have his doubts that it'll happen by 2024, but we'll see what happens on that front. But the College Football Playoff Board of Managers taking matters into their own hands, Joe Rexroad, and now the College Football Playoff is expanding to 12 teams. I think we knew we'd eventually get here. The format is what we thought that it would be. What do you make of this decision now being official and the College Football Playoff expanding to 12 teams?
Well, it's a good thing for college football. I strongly believe that. And we've talked about this before. I changed on that. I was of the mind for the first few years of the 14 playoff. Look, you're not gonna, your champion isn't five or lower. So this gets a champion and it preserves the regular season and all these things. But what it did is it just, it made the focus so dominant on the four teams. And I do think that it had a hand in the usual suspects even getting stronger at the expense of others. Like I think the rich get richer aspect of college football got exaggerated by the 14 playoff. And so to me, I don't care if someone says, well, great, now we get to argue about 13. Then I say, well, guess what? We argue about team 69, 70, 71, 72, 73 every year in March. And great. I mean, there's always going to be teams that are upset about missing out or have a case. And it's true that your champion is probably still going to be coming from the four. But the bottom line is this allows for other conferences to still have a piece of this and for more of the country to have general interest in college football. The idea of this total NFL, SEC, Big Ten, everybody else is out of it would be terrible. And I never really thought that we were actually going to, I mean, I think we're eventually probably going to go to the, like those super leagues and then everybody else. Yes. But as far as at least having a playoff so that you can have the year where Baylor's incredible, Cincinnati last year is incredible. There's at least still some involvement for more of the country. And look, now we at least can have some, I think, good playoff games, right?
Well, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, there's going to be years still where it's like Georgia and Ohio State and Alabama, they're just crushing whoever they play.
I don't think we're going to get any change on that front. I think where we'll see the change is the good playoff games before those. Like, so the if they go to 12,
right,
and the first four get a bye, whatever, however they decide to do this, I think the playoff games before those will be good. I don't know in the current state of college football whether the Georgias and Alabamas and Ohio States are going to change all that much with this.
And I don't know that they will. But I do think that there's a possibility that, you know, more teams being in the playoff helps some of those teams on the recruiting front. You can now be in the only thing that matters, you know, here. Because here at, you know, Tennessee, we've made it two of the last 5 years. Come here. You don't need to go to Alabama to play for a national championship. Is that actually going to happen? Like, I don't know. I mean, there's NIL as part of this too. And like, so it's hard to predict that, but I think it's worth a shot, right? Like, I mean, just to have more programs involved in this thing that is dominates the sport, I think it's worth a shot. So, and look, I really was big on conference championships still mattering, and this does that. And so, you know, because, you know, in the random year where, you know, where let's say, just like Iowa, you know, two safety Iowa comes up and shocks Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. Like, you know, that may not be, they may not be like a great team or whatever in the playoff, but I still, like, I want there to be that reward, you know? And of course, you still have to be in the, among the top six ranks and all that stuff, but you probably would be if you're, say, Iowa, or say, I mean, you know, again, let's go to Tennessee, you know, down year for Georgia, and, but Tennessee has like two, three losses or whatever. I guess they probably wouldn't get to Atlanta, but you know what I'm saying? You shock Alabama, you get that reward. I mean, I just feel like there's just more, like, the, you know, these championship games and stuff, you could become just totally obsolete practically, you know? And I feel like now that more games are going to be significant.
I have mixed feelings on this because I understand, and I agree, like a 12-team playoff, I think probably gets more of the country interested. Because right now, like if you're in the Pac-12, under the current setup, you have no reason to be interested in college football. You just don't. And you can make the same case.
Well, yeah. About,
well, I just think it's – I understand it from that standpoint. The thing I don't like and the thing that makes college football great to me is the regular season really matters, and you are diluting the regular season by doing this. You just are. You know, I don't like two lost teams being in a playoff. I don't. I think what part of what makes college football really good is you have to play well, and you have basically one chance to fall, and that's about it when it comes to making the playoff and getting in that. That's going to change with this, which is fine. I don't know that, you know, I don't know that we're going to get closer games when Alabama's taking on, you know, the seed out of the Pac-12 or whatever it is. I think we will get closer games when you have the lower seeds playing against each other to get to the top four seeds, but I do not like the dilution of the regular season, and this will absolutely do that.
But see, winning a championship can, you know, winning a championship is your ticket. So you're right that there's going to be, I mean, if you have an expanded field of playoffs, like obviously, like you're no longer on this, you must be perfect. The problem is it's the same programs that can only do that, right? So to me, like the fact that you, like the regular season, I would argue means more to a team that you stumble a couple times in the non-league. Let's play, say you play a really tough non-league. Tennessee loses to Pittsburgh. Let's just keep it with Tennessee, you know? But they get way better, and their defense figures it out, and they find some young stars, and everything comes together for that team. And they go on to win a championship. Like, I like that the whole regular season still mattered. The stumble early didn't invalidate the rest of the regular season, you know? I mean, it's kind of like you can spin it however you want with this, but I just think winning championships, even if you're a flawed team early and that can get you in, I think that enhances the regular season.
That's fine, but I have no interest in a three-loss at-large team getting in there. Like, that, you don't deserve to be in a playoff when you've lost three games in a year.
But what if you've changed dramatically? I mean, you've seen college football.
You don't deserve
teams.
To be in a playoff. You've lost three games. That's what college football is.
Well, but it's different now. I mean, you know, like it or not, they're trying to be the NFL. You don't want them to totally be the NFL. But what has happened with the four-team situation is, like, conference championships have really become irrelevant. You know, it's just, did you get in or did you not get in?
I hear you. I don't think this is going to change all that much, that what's going on in college football right now. Like, Alabama's still going to be Bama. Georgia's still going to be Georgia. Ohio State's still going to be Ohio State. If you can get more people interested around the country, that's great. I don't like the idea of all of a sudden some team going 9-3 out there and they find themselves as a number 12 seed at large at the college football playoff. Like, if you're 9-3, you don't need to be in the playoff. That's just how I feel about it. But that's what's going to happen. So we'll see what happens on that front. 615-737.
I disagree with you, but we have to go to break.
We'll continue the discussion coming up next. We'll also get our first look at Tennessee and Pittsburgh as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexro, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexro, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexro coming up at 7:45. Right now, talking college football playoff expansion, taking your thoughts as well on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. John on the text line says, those 9-3 teams won't have the same chance as Seton Hall to advance in March Madness. College football is a much tougher place to be Cinderella. This is coming from John on the text line.
Oh, I totally agree. No, but I mean, it's, you know, it's unlikely that anyone but the usual suspects at this point, as things stand, are going to ultimately be there at the end. But give me a good, you know, give me a good, I'm trying to do the math here. Let's see, the top four. Give me a good 5-12. Can I get a good 5-12? Can I get a good 6-11 game? You know, I think you. And also, I love the campus sites. You know, I think that's great. I wish it was all yes. campus sites. You know, get rid of the bowl involvement and the other stuff. But they're not going to do it. But you know what? At least some campus sites, good. I mean, look, you're right. It's not like basketball where one night you get a couple shooters hot and you can, a low level, like automatic qualifier can beat a one seed or a two seed. But at the same time, like if Georgia's going to just blow the doors off like Oklahoma, like I guess, like, are they going to blow the doors any worse off like Texas A&M, you know, like, I mean, you know, maybe one of these teams can rise up and have some amazing performance. Again, the four team thing, just I don't think was good for the game. I can't sit here and promise this is going to be great for it, but there are some things about it that I think absolutely will be better, and I think this is a good change.
Well, this kind of doubles down on, like, Greg Sankey's probably been good with it either way the whole time because they've had a tremendous amount of success in the four-team playoff. And look, I mean, let's be honest here. When 12 teams come around, you're going to have your conference champion in the SEC. I would imagine in most years you're going to have at least one, maybe two, maybe in some years three other SEC teams that are in that six at-large bids too. So it's going to be a good thing for the SEC moving forward as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, any format's going to be good for the SEC because they're just a lot. Like, the SEC is still – it may not be making as much money right now. You know, that's just – we'll continue to watch that battle. But it's a much better football conference than the Big Ten. I mean, the Big Ten has Ohio State. We saw what Michigan was last year as a poser. We've seen in the past Michigan State be a poser in the playoff. I mean, the only Big Ten team that has done anything, and I think moving forward, the only Big Ten team that probably could at the highest level of the playoff is Ohio State. And obviously the SEC has a lot more programs that could be that. But I guess right now you look at the SEC and it really is, it's two and then it's everybody else. Yeah. But I still think there's just more programs in this league that, you know, that could get there. And maybe aren't that far, you know, like Texas A&M, for example, I guess, maybe, we think, they should.
Great academic institution.
Well, there's that. They always do have the Ivy League of Middle Texas going for them.
No question about it. We'll pick up the discussion on the college football playoff a little bit later in the show. Joe, I do want to get your thoughts on Tennessee and Pittsburgh. If Tennessee is able to win this game, which, by the way, the line is starting to get a little out of control with Tennessee and Pittsburgh. We'll get to that here in just a second. But if Tennessee is able to go on the road and win this game, they start 2-0, they beat a ranked top 25 team in year two with Josh Heupel, what would a win on the road against Pittsburgh signify to you about this team, about the direction that they're heading this season under Josh Heupel?
Yeah, there's definitely some brake pumping that may be needed out here. In fact, I need to now go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com because someone's talking about how when Caroline was on, they're talking about – I've lost it. Sorry.
It's Ricky on the text line. The parlay pick of the week. Got Vols over Pittsburgh. Huge. It's a letdown game for Pitt coming. Be on the lookout.
No, someone else was like, basically, this team's going to crush LSU. It's going to be, Alabama, undefeated Tennessee, and undefeated Alabama. Let's get excited. Like, okay, yeah. Calm down. I like Tennessee in this game, but I don't love Tennessee in this game. I mean, look, I don't look at Tennessee's defense and say, oh yeah, no problem. Keaton Slovis, nah, piece of cake. I got a lot of questions about Tennessee's defense. I think some answers are going to be coming Saturday. I am confident Tennessee's offense is going to make some plays, but I'm also confident that Pat Narduzzi is going to find ways to get after Hendon Hooker. And then it's a matter of, okay, make them pay for it, but also they're going to make you pay for it because they're going to hit your quarterback.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a fascinating game and a good game. It's a huge game. If you win it, that mindset, now I can't even like pretend to rein it in. Okay, if Tennessee wins, it looks really good Saturday. Then the whole watch out world is going to happen. But don't do that yet. Like, wait and see this game first, please, because Pittsburgh could beat Tennessee at home Saturday. I mean, let's all like embrace that possibility.
Well, I think this is a big moment for them in terms of. If you're going to take the next step this year and, you get to 8-4 or 9-3 or you have a strong season that you feel like you can have, like you got to – going on the road and winning a game against a top 25 opponent. Tennessee, if you look at it over the last 15 years, hadn't done that a whole lot. There's not very many wins that have come on the road against top 25 opponents. So, to me, this is – if you get this win, I think it's a very good sign – for your program. Now, they're at 6.5 points now on FanDuel Sportsbook as the favorite. They opened up at 4.5. You can find them on some other places as a touchdown or more favorite in this game. I think the line may start to get a little crazy. Like, I think it's going to be a pretty close game that's going to come down to the wire on Saturday.
This line is a great for people who don't closely follow Vegas. This line, and even some opening lines are true of this. I think it's going to be a great example of one of these teams has a much, much larger fan base than the other team. I mean, it really is sometimes that simple. Not that it's all Tennessee fans putting this money, but the money going on the balls and increasing this line, to me, tells you massive fan base, massively excited about their team. And, I mean, that's not – this line should be – I would set this line personally at Tennessee by like 2.5. Okay. Like,
that's the other part. Like, they're going on the road and they're almost a touchdown favorite.
Look, man. And you know what? I know some people in media who think they're going to go in there and just lay waste to the Panthers, but I think we're going to see a good game. I think Pittsburgh's offense is going to have success Saturday. And, yeah, look, that has not been a great place for atmosphere. But based on what we saw, and I know it was a rivalry game and a primetime game, that was good. Is it going to be like that Saturday? I don't know. But if it is, that's also difficult for Tennessee. This should be a good game.
Going to be very interesting. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad, his rant of the day. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Cause you make my heart race. Shot me out of
it
the
It is that
sky.
Time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rex Road, I turn things over to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hold on. I just want to just jam out a little bit. Okay. All right. Thank you, Michelle, too.
You're welcome, Joe.
Really good song. Really good song. So it's been pretty fantastic of late being back in the Titans locker room. Really, really cool. You know, it opened up last week for the first time since the last time the Titans locker room had been open was after the AFC Championship game in Kansas City, you know, in January of 2020. So we've moved back into really full normalcy in covering sports, and it's been really good just walking around, talking to people. Every conversation isn't being closely monitored by someone. Everything isn't at a podium where, you know, everybody might get like one question, and it's just a totally different situation when someone has a camera on them, or when someone's at a podium. They're naturally going to be less comfortable, and the conversation is going to be worse. And this is I believe, part of the strength of the NFL. And I think for fans, it's great. You know, teams can really be covered. You can have a variety of different stories. It's not all the same story. It's a good thing for everyone. It's good for the players to like have some idea of the people who are covering them. It's good for the fans. Like I said, your team is going to be covered better. It's a win-win for everyone. And it makes me want to contrast it with things that have gone on in college football, over time. And I'll go ahead and just pick on our local teams. You know, Vanderbilt Elon the other night, you know, the game's over, and it after a pretty long delay, you get Clark Lee in there for a few questions, and you get two players for a couple quick, you know, probably, I guess, about maybe five questions a piece. I think it was two, maybe it was three. Yeah, I think it was two guys. And that's it. It's the Vanderbilt picks who they are. This is who you get. Talk to them and you're done. Tennessee the other night. So again, contrast that with you cover an NFL game, NFL, which is king. Okay. You cover an NFL game. You're going to get in the locker room anybody you want, or at least you're going to get Tannehill and Henry at the podium.
Right.
Ryan Tannehill can throw three picks in a playoff game, be absolutely atrocious. He is going to be in the press conference answering questions about it. Okay. If Hendon Hooker throws a pick to lose the game Saturday at Pittsburgh, you know who I know for sure I will not be talking to after that game?
Hendon Hooker.
And it's just absurd. And it's really ridiculous. Again, I'll go back to Thursday, the Vols, and it's a late night. They killed Ball State. Heupel comes in. They did bring in, I guess, three players, you know. And typically, you know, they're going to pick, like, guys who did well in a game. We did get Hendon Hooker after that game, so that's good. But you're a college football coach. You're supposed to be preparing people for life, right? Also, you're supposed to be preparing people for the NFL, I believe. I mean, now, most of these players will not be in the NFL, but they all aspire to be in the NFL. Who wouldn't? If you're good enough to play college football, of course that's your aspiration. So you don't want to prepare them for what's going to be day after day after day after day of people in the locker room speaking to them, coming up to them, hey, can I talk to you about this or that? You don't want to prepare that. You want to keep them away because you want to protect your interests. So you are protecting your interests at the expense of them. Let's make that very clear. At the expense of them. It does not serve them to be protected if things don't go perfectly. And who does it help? Like, again, I'll separate Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Who does it help if you're Vanderbilt to not let reporters just talk to players after a game and have different stories and more possibility of coverage? I don't understand it. Again, I'm picking on our local teams. They are representative of how things have gone. Oh, yeah. I could go on and on about this. I covered Nick Saban in the 1990s at Michigan State. At that point, every day after practice, you could talk to any player you wanted, or 3 days a week, any player you wanted. You could go, like, after practice to the side, sit down on a couch, talk to them, whatever you wanted to do. After a game, It wasn't open locker room, but it was bring everybody out. Of course, the quarterback comes out. Win or lose, good or bad, of course, all the star players come out. You know, win or lose, good or bad. And you actually can cover a team and not all have the same eight quotes from the same two people. And now, of course, Nick Saban, look at him now. It's, you know, he has over time chipped away that. He gave us a seniors only thing in 1999. Because he didn't want Plaxico Burress to complain about the quarterbacking anymore. So, like Nick Saban is part of the problem. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, even Nick Saban, you know, back then had more of a it's more of an NFL mindset. As we move forward with athletes having more autonomy, having social media, being able to get paid to do interviews, I really hope that college athletics PR people look around. And I understand that ultimately you can't tell your coaches what to do. I mean, this is more of a coaching issue, I think. But I really hope they look around and push for this and say, you know what? This program over here has decided that they're actually going to open things up because they are preparing guys for the NFL and because it helps coverage and it's good. And isn't it interesting that the NFL is king and the NFL does not have some big concern about about a reporter having a one-on-one conversation with a player, like it's going to ruin, you know, it's going to ruin the product or damage break the shield, whatever it is. I really hope that some people start using some common sense, because it's getting to the point where, like, I'm excited about Tennessee Pittsburgh, but I'm not that excited about covering it. Like, I know that Sunday for the Titans game, I'm going to be able to talk to whoever I want to and write something that is actually interesting and different from other people. If Tennessee loses Saturday, I'm going to get like a couple quotes that everybody gets, and it's not going to be very good. And I know that this is now into a, you know, I know some fans are like, oh, shut up and be more creative and all that. But this is, you should treat people like adults in college football, and I think it's gone the other way.
Well, you bring up a point that I think is really interesting in terms of where this could be going, because as you get guys in here now on college football teams that are, there's big money being thrown around left and right and TV deals and all this other stuff, but now NIL is a part of it as well, and they have a chance to be paid. You know, it's not the same, nor should it be, I think, approach as it's been in the past. Number one, like, to me, you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. Like, you're adults at that point. I understand that, you know, it's college football. They're not technically professionals. And, you know, maybe there should be a little bit of a difference between pros and college. But, you know, the thing that used to drive me nuts was, like, if you're a freshman, you can't talk to the media. Or the freshman rule, you got to be like a junior before you talk to the media. It's like, well, are they adults or not? Are they on the team or not? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So I know what the root cause of it is, and you've hit it. It's protecting the interest of their own team. They don't want people saying stuff that goes out of line. But that's also where your PR department comes in. Like, you have a PR department for a reason. Part of their job is to, like, coach people on what to say in interviews. That absolutely happens for every team throughout history of time. So I am interested to see, as NIL and college sports, specifically college football, continues to get bigger, if that approach changes or not moving forward. Because I'm with you. I think it should. I think it benefits ultimately everyone in the end.
And real quick, you know, and I've mentioned this before, but friend of the show, Tom Izzo, who I covered for a lot of his career, has never changed one bit. It is open locker room after every game, win or lose. And that's exactly what he says. Guys all want to be in the NBA. That's what they're going to get in the NBA. Why would we do anything differently? So you go in there, and the guy who just missed – I've done it. The guy who just missed a free throw to lose the Big Ten to Wisconsin is bawling in the locker room. And there's a bunch of reporters around him asking questions. And some people – I mean, I think some people in college sports will be like, oh, my God. But you know what? It's real life, man.
Yeah.
And I just – like, I don't – I understand the mindset. I hate the mindset of not allowing those situations to happen, because, yes, they are adults. And if you really want to help them, then you go ahead and put them in these situations.
This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on all things Middle Tennessee sports. Look ahead to the Titans and Giants coming up as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.